Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
As Monica mentioned, this morning I'm going to talk about time. And one reason, as she said, is because this morning we made a change in time, going off of daylight savings time. And I looked it up a little bit to get some information. Daylight savings time has been going on intermittently since the 1880s for a variety of different reasons. But it wasn't made official in the United States until 1966. And as far as how it's going to affect you and me, it's just that the next week or so is going to seem a little weird. It'll be getting light a little earlier, that's one thing. But it's going to be getting dark really early, which always kind of throws us off a little bit. And I'm not sure why somebody somewhere decided that changing the clock was a good idea. I mean, they say it was to save energy, all sorts of different reasons, whatever. But personally, I could never see the point. I saw something on, I'm going to turn this thing off. Here we go. I saw something on Facebook the other day, and it was supposedly a Native American quote. It showed a Native American chief picture there. And on the bottom, it said, only the government would think you could cut off the top of a blanket, sew it on the bottom, and have a longer blanket. That's kind of, which was his description of daylight savings time, which I actually thought was pretty good. So let me say before I start that this is not going to be a lesson on time management. I know some of you how many people here have taken a seminar through their career on time management? How many have given a seminar on time management? A number of you out there, too. I know. We know what we're supposed to be doing with our time. We got the ABC method, we got the priority method, we got the listing method, we got all these different methods, all sorts of books. There's a whole section in the bookstore on it. Of course, whether or not we're using what we learned in those time management seminars is another issue entirely. You know, it's a funny thing about these time management courses. I've both taken them and taught them. If they didn't work for us or if we weren't paying attention, then we're probably still running around like crazy trying to get everything done that we need to get done, and that's bad enough. But on the other hand, if they did work and we were paying attention, then we're probably getting twice as much accomplished as we were before, only we're running around just as fast but more efficiently. That's kind of what we're doing. In other words, making better use of our time doesn't necessarily increase our happy or our enjoyment of life. It just increases its velocity. And when the speed of our life increases, there's this feeling that a lot of us have that somehow, somewhere, we're missing something. We're missing something. And it's that thing that we think that we're missing that I want to talk about today. Now, it's safe to say today, in this modern age, that most of us have become experts at monitoring and using our time. We've become much more efficient and, as a result, more productive, and it's very easy to see why. We have smartphones. How many people here? I'd ask, does anybody here not have a smartphone? Okay, there you go. We got a couple. Good for you. But you got a phone anyway. We have Google Calendars. Anybody? Okay, got a few. We have wearable devices, Fitbits or Apple Watches, whatever, that measure everything. We have computers that schedule our week down to the nanosecond, all that stuff. We got lots of really cool technology. The problem is we seem to have this illusion, and it is an illusion, that because we can now squeeze so much more activity into the same amount of time or less, that we are in complete control of our time. So, let me ask this. Does anyone here believe you have complete control of your schedule? Ooh, usually I get one or two retired people who think they do. I also notice that no mothers or parents ever raise their hand because they know they got no control at all, right? I mean, the truth is most of us respond to time the same way that Pavlov's dogs responded to the bell. We kind of do. My watch or my phone says this, so I got to do that. My watch or my calendar says that, so I got to do this. We just respond automatically. And as a result, even though we may be getting a lot more things accomplished in whatever time we do have, we also may be getting a lot less out of life, which is really too bad. Because that means that we are not making intelligent use of the constant stream of present moments that are ours to use in whatever way we choose. Now, this is hardly a new concept. Over 100 years ago, in the very, very early 1900s in London, there was a young law clerk by the name of Arnold Bennett. And he was one of the first time use studies. He studied how different people use time, some of them very effectively, but most of the world fairly inefficiently. And once he had researched it, he published a very successful pamphlet that was entitled, I love this, How to Live on 24 Hours a Day. Great title. You ought to be in marketing, you know? And in it, he wrote this. It's really great. It's a little paragraph. Just stick with me. He says, time is the inexplicable raw material of everything. With it, all is possible. Without it, nothing is possible. He says, you wake up in the morning and your purse is magically filled with 24 hours of the unmanufactured tissue of the universe of your life. It is yours. It is the most precious of possessions. No one can take it from you. No one can steal it, and no one receives either more or less than you receive. Isn't that great? Pretty straightforward. In other words, what he was telling us is that this thing we call time is a very unique commodity. All right? However, there are a lot of people today who deal with time as if it is either an enemy or a competitor. Right? You know people like that. So do I. Even though we all receive exactly the same amount, many of us feel, at least on occasion, that someone keeps taking it away from us. I've had days like that. We forget that people like, let's say, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, you know, the big money people, that they may have a lot more money than we have, but they have exactly the same amount of time. And that amount of time was all the time they needed to accomplish what they accomplished, to make the billions of dollars that they made. Now, we can see that with the money people, but it's not just true about business people. We can go back in history hundreds of years. Look at all the great success stories throughout history. We got Galileo and Da Vinci and Michelangelo and Magellan, the artists, all these people. We got the inventors, Thomas Edison, Booker T. Washington, just to name a few. You can all make your own list. And I do want to point out that these people did not have any of the high-tech gadgets that we have today. Not one of them, right? That allow us to live life at such an accelerated pace. They had no smartphones. They had no automobiles, no interstate highways or jet airplanes. They had no email, no Twitter, no texting, and no Snapchat. You know, the teenagers couldn't live that way, but that's where they were. And look at the things that they managed to accomplish. As a matter of fact, it was Mahatma Gandhi who once said, there's more to life than increasing its speed. It was a great quote. Okay, so successful living, which is what we're all looking for, isn't so much about how much time we have, it's about how we use it. Now, as an aside, and I'll get back to this a little more later, spirituality is not about what day or how often we go to church or that kind of thing. It's not even about how long we pray or how often we meditate or any of those things. It's about how well we acknowledge the invisible presence of spirit in our life, as our life, every moment of every day. Let me say that one more time. It is about how well we acknowledge the invisible presence of spirit or God or life or whatever word works for you in our life, as our life, every moment of every day. So it's about quality instead of quantity. I'm going to talk about that more in a few minutes. Now, in recent history, the last 100 years or so, Albert Einstein, I mentioned him last week in a talk, he was the person that we have to thank for showing the world that time was much more flexible than people had thought up until then with his theory of relativity. There was a reporter who was interviewing him, and he asked him if he could explain very, very simply what it meant that time was relative, his theory that time was relative. And Einstein thought about it for a minute, and then he said, if you have a pretty girl on your lap, an hour seems like a minute. But if you put your hand on a hot stove, a minute seems like an hour. That's relativity. So that was his answer, which I thought was kind of cute. So as a contemporary of Einstein, Dr. Ernest Holmes, who is the man who wrote The Science of Mind that this teaching is based on, he realized that this was just as true in metaphysics as it was in quantum physics. Because he understood that our relationship to time is always changing depending upon what is in our consciousness while we are experiencing that time. And as we teach here, what is in our consciousness at any given moment is always going to be whatever we decide to put there or at the very least, whatever we decide not to get rid of. Because you may not be able to control what comes into your mind, but you sure as hell should be able to control what stays. And that's a firm idea in this teaching. So for just that reason, instead of working so hard to manage our time, most of us would be better off if we spent more time learning how to manage our consciousness. In other words, if we could learn how to center ourselves in the present moment, I don't mean om like this, especially if you're driving, but to center ourselves in the present moment whenever we want, if we could learn to distinguish between what is giving us energy and what is draining our energy, then time would no longer have a hold on us. Because time really is a spiritual concept. It really, really is. It isn't something that's imposed upon us. It's something that appears differently and responds differently to each one of us as we change the way we look at it. Because time is an essential part of the way our spiritual nature experiences the physical world. That's the relationship between spirit and the physical. There was an Argentine writer by the name of Jorge Borges, I think, unless I'm mispronouncing the name, I think that's it. And he says this, it's beautiful, it's very poetic. He said, "Time is the substance I am made of. Time is a river that sweeps me along, but I am the river. It's a tiger that rips me apart, but I am the tiger. It is a fire that consumes me, but I am the fire." Very, very beautiful. And what he means is we are all connected to an infinite source of time, just like we are connected to an infinite source of health, wealth, and love. That's all he was saying with that. So if we don't seem to have enough time in our life, it is not God's fault. I say that in parentheses. We just aren't intelligently using the moments that we have been given. You know, if we begin to look at the days and the minutes of our life as being elastic, sort of like a balloon whose size we can control, only instead of controlling it with our breath, we control it with our thoughts and emotions. If we do this, we'll find out very, very quickly that we actually do have the ability to choose the speed and the rhythm of our life, as well as the quality and the depth. And if that isn't spiritual, I don't know what is. Now, one more factor of history is bringing this in. Dividing the days and the hours and into minutes and seconds and all that tiny equal segments is actually a relatively recent phenomenon. It wasn't until the 1600s or so with the invention of the pendulum that Galileo originally designed that we started using minutes and seconds. Before that, people just used the sun. So the time was based on when the sun was straight up, assuming you could see it. And some historians say that is when we took control of time. But personally, I think that's when time took control of us. It really did. Because today, a lot of people still think of time as a unit of measurement where we line up all the events of our life in chronological order and see how much more we can squeeze in. But as long as we think of time that way, we're going to continue to feel limited by it. We're going to keep rushing around trying to get everything done, not enjoying life nearly as much as we could. So this morning, I am here to tell you that there's an alternative. There is a spiritual alternative. What if we began to look at time in a way that we've never looked at it before, in a way that a lot of the world wouldn't even understand? What if, instead of seeing time as hands on a clock or days in a calendar, what if we measured our experiences not by when they occurred or how long they last, but how meaningful they are? By how interesting or beautiful or powerful or how spiritual they are. For example, 2 minutes watching a sunset would rank higher than 2 minutes standing in line at the post office. Okay, that makes sense, right? Certainly does to me. 1 minute hugging your cat or petting your dog, take your choice, would rank higher than 1 minute yelling at the car in front of you that just cuts you off. More valuable, okay? Then, once we start doing that, you get the idea, we could make a deal with ourselves that at the end of the day, the higher ranking minutes would be the ones we remember and the other ones we just let go. Because hours, minutes that are full of love or joy or peace of mind or excitement should receive more consideration than hours filled with anger or fear or boredom or any of those other things. They're much more precious. Those moments are more precious, so they should count for more. Minutes we spend in the company of a friend or a loved one should receive far more attention than minutes spent in frustration and resentment, because one of them expands our life while the other one diminishes it. One of them drains our energy while the other one energizes us, fills us. That's why it's important for us to understand first and then to accept that as spiritual beings with the power to choose, which is what we are, we have a power available to us that enables us to decide not only how we spend our time, but how we value it and how we remember it, which is a whole lot more important. I mean, what we're talking about here, Greta talked about it a few weeks ago, is awareness, but not just a mechanical awareness to what time is going by or an intellectual awareness, but an inner awareness of how we feel as we go through our day. And when I say that, I'm talking about being aware of our mental state as we go through the moments of the day, not just automatically responding to what happens out there, of being aware of what emotions we're holding on to, of where we're focusing our attention. I mean, is our mind going 100 miles an hour while we're talking on our iPhone, stuck in the downtown connector, late for a meeting that we knew we had to be early for? Anybody ever been through something like that? I'm sure most of us have. Are we trying to close a deal with an important new client while we're still mad at our spouse or a partner and hanging on to that stuff, chewing on it in the back of our mind about an argument we had over breakfast? Are we worried about what we're going to pick up at the store for dinner while trying to get to our kids' daycare center on time? These are perfectly normal, doesn't mean they're good for us, but perfectly normal responses. Now, if you can accomplish those kind of things through your day while maintaining your composure without feeling rushed or stressed at all, God bless you. Okay? That's great if you can do that. And some people have become enlightened enough or balanced enough to be able to do that. But for most of us, if we find ourselves being stressed out and exhausted and out of touch by the end of the day, or even worse, by the end of most days, then we probably need to make a change. But the change we need to make is not a change of something we're doing out there. It's not the way we're managing time. It's what we are thinking and feeling in here. In here. If we can learn, and we all can, to become aware of where our mind is in whatever moment we are in, we can start to break free from the rat race. And as somebody once said, I love it, they said the hardest part of winning the rat race is they keep bringing in faster rats. All right? So that's it. It's not news to any of us that when we are completely focused on the clock, when we're always meeting deadlines or trying to be somewhere at a certain time, that we give up control of our life. That's not a surprise. We all know this. We've all felt that way from time to time, okay? Kids, job, relationship, all of these things are pulling at us. But what we don't realize is that when we do this, besides giving up control of our time, we're also giving up control of our feelings at the same time, because our emotions become tied to our schedule. They tie to our schedule. Instead of being happy or unhappy based on how our life feels when we wake up in the morning or when we go to bed at night or based on what we are doing or who we're with, our mood starts to depend on whether we're late or early or whether we get everything done. And I don't know about you, but that's not the way that I want to live. Once we make the decision to put time back in its rightful place, to make it something that responds to us instead of the other way around, we may have to practice some skills that we haven't used for a long time. So get ready to feel uncomfortable, a few of you. We may need to practice on how to focus on doing one thing at a time. One thing at a time, okay? If you're real good at multitasking, that's hard to do. We also may need to remember how to say no. Let me hear you say that. No. Very good. You guys are good, okay? That's hard for a lot of us, okay? We may have to remember how to reconnect with our body and with our emotions and with the people around us. And that entails actually noticing how our body is reacting to what we're doing. when you're driving, when you're working, whatever it happens to be, are you tense? Does your stomach hurt? Okay? Are your palms sweaty? Are you shallow breathing or deep breathing? We may need to become aware of how fast we're going, not just physically, but also mentally and emotionally, and decide whether we are consciously choosing the speed at which we are moving or whether we're just going at the speed of the crowd. We have to learn to be able to tell that because, as a general rule, the crowd is usually going too fast for its own good. You know that, and so do I. Now, as we begin doing these things on a regular basis, we may find it to be a little bit uncomfortable, at least in the beginning, just like daylight savings time feels a little uncomfortable in the beginning. Once we start to change our rhythm, it's going to throw us off for a little while. But the good news is, it will change. Things will start to shift, and we'll find ourselves relating to the world in a totally different way. Now, every single person in this room and every single person outside this room is able to do this whenever you want. Whenever you want to do it and whenever you decide to do it permanently. So that means, if we're talking about making choices, that tomorrow for everybody in here can race by the same way it has for years. We don't have to think about it. It'll just buzz by default. Or we can consciously decide to make it special simply by our presence. Now, we can start with the little things. Get up a little bit earlier and meditate for 10 minutes. It's not that hard to do. When you take a shower, allow yourself to stand there and actually feel the water on your skin rather than your mind making lists for what you have to do today. Drive to work the long way where the scenery's prettier. All right? It won't take long to notice a difference. As we start to feel that we are in control of how we are relating to it, we'll find that there's very little we can't change. We can stop doing most of the things that we don't like. There's a few you're probably going to have to do, but a lot of them you don't. And it may not change immediately, but we need to head that way. We can also, this is important, release anything in the past that's distracting us and release worrying about the future. Now, I didn't say stop thinking about the future. I said stop worrying about it. That's different. So as we start to focus our attention on what we can do in the present moment, we can stop wasting time thinking about things we can't control, things that are over and done, and things that haven't happened yet. All right? And if we do just a few of these things, we will notice that time flows differently than it ever did before for us. Instead of a rushing stream that's very shallow, our life will start to feel like a very deep, gently flowing river, which is much slower but much more powerful, much more powerful. All right, let's practice. This will just take a minute. Let's take an example. You don't have to do anything. Just sort of listen and think, all right? Let's say we're meeting a friend for lunch in Midtown tomorrow. We work up in Buckhead, friends down here. Here's the way it normally happens. We get out of the office a few minutes late because we tried to get in one more phone call, all right? We had 2 minutes to go, so we went ahead and did a 3-minute phone call. We did that. We get out of the office a few minutes late. We start worrying about the traffic on Peachtree Street or Georgia 400. Even before we get in the car, we feel frustrated that we're probably going to be late and make the other person wait. So that's a state of mind we're in. We start driving too fast, at which point we notice that every idiotic driver in the city is lined up in front of us, multiple lanes, along with a garbage truck, a MARTA bus, and a school bus, okay? We hit every light. We are always in the wrong lane. We show up at the restaurant angry and frustrated and immediately snap at the waiter, and it goes downhill from there, okay? Anybody ever have that? Okay, good. Got a few honest people anyway who are saying that. Now let's try it this way. Before we leave the office a few minutes early, we think for a moment about how happy we are to be having lunch with such a good friend. So we get in our car and we drive at a reasonable speed, being courteous to all other people out there on the road. We let people in very nicely. If we stop at a light, we look around and we notice something beautiful while we're standing there. Look at that beautiful new building. And as we get to the restaurant, we choose to be happy to be there, right? Happy to see our friend, ready for a wonderful lunch. We thank the server for all that he or she does, and we give him a nice tip when we leave. All right? So those are the two. The question is, do you think that one of these experiences would take a lot more time than the other? They could, but they probably won't. They probably won't, all right? But which one sounds like a better use of your day? I think the answer is obvious. Because a few minutes of unconscious anger and irritation can ruin your whole day. It just can. That's why the spiritual approach says it isn't about how much time we spend, it's about how we choose to spend it. All right? Which brings up one more point before I finish. We should always, always take the time to look at the beauty all around us. All right? Yeah, I could have you look around this room right now with the different people. There's beauty all over this room. We should always take the time to be creative. We should always take the time to laugh, to play, to eat well and chew your food slowly, as your grandmother would say, and sleep when you need it. All right? I mean, I'm here to tell you, a nap during the week is a spiritual experience. It really is. We should always take the time, all right, to think, to feel, and to pray. And pray is simply knowing something better. Emerson said prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life from the highest point of view. That's all we're talking about. And we should always take the time to love and to be loved. Always, always. These things are important. These things are important. They should be the stuff that fills the minutes of our life. They should. Whenever we're doing something we love to do, or doing something we love to do with someone we love to do it with, all right, everything seems to happen quickly and easily, right? Time doesn't mean anything when we're doing that. We've all had that experience. And in that state of mind, even if we do run into a problem, we handle it almost intuitively. We handle it automatically. In fact, it's so easy, things happen so easily, that we may even start to wonder if we have slipped into some sort of a strange other dimension where everything works right and people do exactly what I think they should do, refer to last week's talk, and everything's working perfectly beautifully. The truth is, that's what we've done. That is what we've done. When we start to live our life in tune with our spiritual energy, then time loses its ability to either push us or drag us along. We find ourselves living at a more natural pace that allows us not only to accomplish the stuff that's important to us, but to enjoy ourselves while we're doing it. To enjoy ourselves while we're doing it. When we finally take that step, all these things I'm talking about, okay, when we just do a few of these things at a time and then add another one as we go along, that's when we will know in that moment that we have all the time for whatever we want to do that we are ever going to need. And that's when we finally realize what that means to have all the time in the world. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Okay, let's just take a moment here and take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. Plenty of time to think about it at your leisure. Knowing that from this moment, I claim control of my life. I allow myself to breathe deeply the precious air that's always there. I allow myself to open my mind and think about the beauty that is all around me. I allow my body to relax and rest. I recognize that I can be in every moment in this lifetime at peace. Whatever's going on around me, whether it's an election, whether it's all the things on the news, whatever it is, I have the power to choose how I respond. So I start looking at the moments of my life as the precious things that they are. I no longer allow myself to waste time surrounding myself with negativity, whether it's negative people, negative thoughts, negative news, or negative entertainment. I do not allow those things to affect my level of love. I do not go into fear. I am conscious about what is around me, but I am even more conscious about what is within me. I recognize the spirit of life in me that is timeless, the presence of God that is timeless, and the presence of love that is always there. So as I do this, I move through the world at the perfect speed. Sometimes faster, sometimes slower, but always in control. Always awake and aware. Choosing where I spend my time, choosing where I don't. And as I do this, I give thanks. I give thanks for this physical world where my choices are played out. I give thanks for the people who teach me so much by their presence. I give thanks for what I know. I give thanks for what I have been given. And I give thanks for all that I have yet to give. Knowing this is the truth for me and every person, I release this awareness into consciousness, letting it be so from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is.